Welcome to this episode of the Health Talk podcast, the podcast about innovative medicines and politics. I'm Hans Andersen and the editor of Health Talk. In today's episode, we will explore the forefront of healthcare innovation and access to medicines with some of the most influential leaders from MSD, a global pharma giant. So we are very privileged to have with us Cyril Chevrier. You are president of Mid-Europe and leads a business of more than 2,000 people in 32 different markets. Welcome.
Welcome, and to us, thank you. Thank you for welcoming us. Sorry.
Yeah, thank you. And we have also with us Andrea Markofan. You are the new managing director of MSD in Norway. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much, Hans. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And Jakob Tellgren, head of MSD's operations in the Nordic and Baltic cluster. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
So thank you for having taken the time, guys. And we have a lot of ground to cover, so just let's dig into it. But I think we should start just with that you can say a little bit of the background of to our listeners who may not know what MSD or Merck, as it's called in the United States, just to make it a little bit more complex. So perhaps say a little bit of the company. Say a little bit about the company.
Yeah, I mean, thank you again. MSD, we're all about saving and improving lives through breakthrough science. And we're certainly going to talk about science. It's a very, very exciting time. There's significant progress at our company and generally in science. We're a global company, as you shared. We're also very, very committed to Europe. We have more than 20,000 employees in Europe. I work across Europe. We have 21 manufacturing sites. And we focus a lot both in medicines, vaccines, but also animal health, and which is an important presence we have, by the way, in Norway, because we probably won't get into this today, but the One Health approach is something that is important, we believe. In the medicines, we're today one of the leaders, if not the leaders, in oncology, in cancer care. But we also have multiple other therapy areas that we are present and are doing research. And then on the vaccine side, we pride ourselves for having today the largest vaccines after the COVID vaccines. And we'll probably get into some of this, but I won't give any brand names.
No, absolutely. That's good. So I think most Norwegian know MSD for your oncology focus. Can you share with us some of the latest trends of MSD's advancements in cancer treatment?
I mean, I can start and then chime in. But I think what's exciting with what's happening in cancer today is actually, if you start with going back a few years to what happened with HIV in the beginning of the 90s, that was a death sentence at that point in time. Now, if you move fast forward another 40 years, it's still a very severe disease, but it's a manageable disease that you can live a long and hopefully good life with. I think that's exactly where we are when it comes to cancer development, and that's why it makes it so extremely exciting to be part of what's happening. It's fast, it's science-driven, to Cyril's point earlier, and it has an enormous impact for societies, and that's nice to talk about, but also if you take it down to individuals, it's really, really a dramatic shift on what's happening, and we're in the center of that, and I think it couldn't be more exciting than that, actually.
And I think it's a privilege, I mean, to be part of the company, because if you look at the footprint when it comes to clinical research, especially in immuno-oncology, I think we're probably the first there. And you can see the advancements and the way cancer care has evolved in the past 10 years, especially. We're talking in immuno-oncology about some mechanism of action that have won the Nobel Prize.
Exactly.
I think that's something brilliant, and it's the essence of what we're doing. Breakthrough therapies, which are completely revolutionizing the way we're treating patients. We're talking talking about doubling the survival in lung cancer. That's something that's unheard of. Mm. And being part of this and driving innovation to patients, because I think that's the core of what we're doing. Mm. And being there and having these therapies, I think it's a matter of us to be able to partner with the society so that we can ensure that a welfare state like Norway becomes even stronger.
Yeah, since immunotherapies arrived at the scene for, yeah, let's say 10, 12 years ago, it has really changed the way we look about cancer, mm, and given a lot of people hope.
Yeah, I mean, building on what was just shared, I mean, over the last years, there's been such a progress in looking at how do you boost the immune system, and that has really transformed the way cancer is treated. And now what's interesting is, as we look at science, we now continue to have multiple programs, and we have the broadest clinical program, mm, to look at how do you continue looking for the right molecules to address multiple checkpoint inhibitors to really boost the immune system. Yeah. The second area that we're studying is medicines that address pathways that are pathways through which the cancer grows, and how do you try to block some of those pathways. Mm. Mm. So there are multiple medicines there already, and we have a broad program into that field. And then the third area that we're studying is how do you try to work on the target tissues and the sensitivities of those tissues. So in particular, you have a new class that multiple companies are studying, which are the antibody drug conjugates. And we have, again, there, the broadest clinical development program, mm, alone and with partners. So we've seen tremendous, mm-hmm, changes in the, mm, last 5 to 8 years, and we're gonna see even more in the next 10 years. And I said a few words around the modalities. Now, the second really area that we're working on is how do you move from having treatment at metastatic stages, of the disease to early stages. Mm. And that's really what's exciting. It's not only about how do you broaden modalities of treatment, but how do you go after treatments that will avoid cancer recurrence. Mm. And therefore, we now start to talk about cure. Mm. That's to the, yep, point that, mm, Jacob was making, you know, in HIV. We can really look at the next 20 years as being very, very transformational. And today, in some of the indications that we are present, we see that we're able to start talking about really the ability to avoid recurrence, mm, of cancer. Mm. And the earlier you treat, obviously, the better.
Exactly. So you also have a growing cooperation with other companies like Moderna in cancer vaccines, and we could also bring on the table your cooperation with Ultimovax, is a Norwegian biotech company, which are currently studying in phase 2 one of your drugs together with their UV1 vaccine. What do you think about why do you cooperate with other companies? Can you give us a little bit impact or introduction on that?
So ultimately, I think what the company is all about is to follow the science. And then it's sometimes there's many ways of setting this up, and some companies are focused on certain therapeutic areas, mm, and they focus there. I mean, the approach here from MSD has always been to follow the science. So if you believe in that, then you will end up in, first of all, in a couple of different therapeutic areas. And I think that's, if you go back and look into the history, you can clearly see that. Mm. It also means that you from time to time are gonna end up together with other companies, because, mm, you just realize, well, they might have a kind of a mechanism, or they have a methodology, or they have a piece of the puzzle that is important if you follow that science, mm, path. And that's why, so it's not that we kind of have decided, or not at least what I know, that we have decided that these are the companies we should collaborate with, mm, but it's really driven by the science, by, mm, the curiosity on what we want to do and what we see. And then there's, you know, there's going to pop up partners, mm, that might have something that we can do together.
Mm. that is cooperation into melanoma, head and neck cancer, which are very, very big categories or indications, which is, of course, tremendously important to have a improved treatment for.
Yeah, the ultimately, I mean, again, there is how do you try to avoid recurrence of cancer? How do you boost further the immune response system? So you mentioned with Moderna, this is a neoantigen therapy. So that is ultimately the objective, and we know it's a hard one to get to. So that's why we multiply our own internal research development, but also we've been extremely active in business development and partnership. We're one of the most active company in the last years. And to Jacob's point, we do this very early in the science. So preclinical very often or early clinical, so that we truly then try to work together to advance science.
Exactly. Coming to Norway, Andrea, MSD has 1/3, I think, of the clinical studies currently ongoing here in Norway.
Exactly, and I think it's an important testament of our commitment to Norway society, and the fact that Norway has been at the forefront for so many years in valuing clinical evidence. And I think that's something that needs to continue to happen for in the benefit of Norwegian patients. And to your previous point, because I think it's very important to mention about the vaccine. So we are evaluating this, but I think it's a good sign when you are evaluating against your own breakthrough therapy, and that shows that you're definitely redefining survival expectations. So we are working into different directions. We do want to have this very clear footprint when it comes to real world data. We want to show the efficacy and safety of the portfolio. And yes, Norway, it's an important market for us, and we hope to partner with the authorities so that it continues to be so, and that the innovation is valued, because this is what is going to bring more, let's say, innovation value into society and bring these breakthrough therapies faster to patients.
Very good point. So that brings us over to another theme, your cooperation with the government, for many drug companies, a challenging cooperation with the governments, not only in Norway, of course, but across Europe and probably also in the United States, where we see kind of more tougher climate towards the pharma industry. So let's talk about Europe, How, Cyril, how will you describe the environment that you address towards the government coming to reimbursement for new drugs and new indications?
I think it's fair to say that we've seen tremendous progress in Europe in terms of really bringing innovation to patients, and we've seen progress in doing this with higher equity. That is, wherever you live in Europe, we've seen progress in accessing innovation. Now, are we there? No. There are gaps. There are gaps across Europe. There are gaps within countries where different communities may have different levels of access. There's also delays. From the moment that the European Medical Agency approves medicine to the moment that that medicine is available to benefit patients, it takes anywhere from less than 100 days in some countries to 800 days in others. And that is why today European Union is working on redefining the EU pharmaceutical strategy. And as you know, there are significant conversations on a package of legislation that is really revisiting the regulation that were built years after years over the last 20 years to say, what should we have in Europe to really in the next 20 years achieve largely two things. One is build the most vibrant and competitive life science sector so that we discover and develop medicines, vaccines, and other technologies in Europe. And how do we improve patient access? And those two goals are fundamental to what we do every day. And those two goals are what we discuss with governments across Europe, what we discussed the last few days in Norway, because that ultimately is what enables success. Those two go together also.
Could you say a little bit about how NOAA is on that continuum? You said it takes from 100 days to 800 days to get in reimbursement for a drug.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I can comment a bit because I have a background also in market access. So I've been working and looking at the weight indicators across Europe. And I think now there's a bit of a disconnect between, let's say, the aspirations of the country in providing the best therapies for Norwegians and what's actually happening. Because if we look at the weight indicators, you will see that you have almost 400 days versus the EMA approval. So if we look at the period between 2015 and 2018, there have been almost 200 molecules approved by the medicine, by the European Medicine Agency. Out of those, I think less than half were available in 2019 in Norway. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important point. And I think that's where we need to partner with the authorities and see exactly what are the key principles that we want to achieve.
Hmm.
Because we need to ensure that this innovation is coming and that also the systems looks at the entire cost of the treatment when it comes to this and at the societal cost associated to productivity. Days of staying in the hospital for patients, administration costs, and so on. And I think we, as a company, we have the flexibility to look into those type of managed entry agreements, for instance, because we need to put all our resources and knowledge into bringing those therapies and ensuring that we put patients first and that the society also comes together so that we bring the best therapies for the patients in Norway.
But if just to build on that, sometimes I think there's a little bit of an overemphasis on the conflict between the authorities and the companies. I don't necessarily see it as a conflict. We come in with different objectives sometimes, but at the end of the day, at least in the countries that we serve, I think there's a very strong, you know, foundational belief that everybody wants to try to do the best. But then we come in with different objectives, we have different, you know, day-to-day situations, etc. And we just need to come to a point where we agree on how to take that forward. I know it's compelling from the outside to point out, hey, there's a conflict going on there, and you know, how is it going? I don't necessarily see it like that. Does it mean that we always agree or always have the same opinion? No, it doesn't. But it's really something that we need to be able to foster. We had really good examples out of the last 2 days here in Norway. We've had good, productive, transparent discussions with important people within the Norwegian ecosystem. Does it mean that we agree on everything? No, it doesn't necessarily do it. But at the end of the day, we need to come to a solution. And I think that's ongoing.
You said the Norwegian ecosystem. So you have been now, the last couple of days, been meeting several of the key opinion leaders or and key organizations in the Norwegian decision system, like Sykehusinnkjøp, for instance. Can you give us a little bit more input on who you have been talking to and what you have been discussing?
No, we've been, first of all, we've had, and I think I want to build on Jacob's point, we've had really constructive conversation. What we're committed for many years to Norway, and those conversations, they're not ad hoc conversation, they're conversation that we have regularly. We've recently appointed a new managing director in Norway because we truly believe in progressing science and patient access in Norway. What's interesting at the moment is there's a tension in our eyes around the strategy that is a very quite bold strategy that has been outlined by the government around life science and what they aspire to achieve in Norway and the way medicines reach patients. Think about a company like ourselves. So you just mentioned earlier 30% of the clinical trials in Norway are clinical trials that are sponsored by our company. We're an important company, as you mentioned, but that's a large percentage. That's a large percentage.
Yeah.
What does it show? One, that we believe in Norway. But two, that there may be a number of companies that have different views and think that it's not necessarily the best place to do this. And they certainly don't believe this because of the quality of the infrastructure, because of how well trained and are the scientific leaders and clinicians are, because that's top notch. You've got a very strong healthcare system and professionals. They struggle very often because what is being researched in Norway doesn't necessarily, you know, once demonstrated that it works, benefits Norwegian patients, because it takes so much time to reach the physicians, or because there's a lot of complexity in terms of evaluation of what should or should not be available to Norwegian patients. So we largely, our conversation is about this principle that is starting to make its way in Norway that we struggle with, which is good is good enough. And we believe in the best is what is should be offered, and let's have conversation on how to provide the best to Norwegian patients, not good is good enough.
Could you share with us a little bit of what your discussions with sykehuset? You probably met people from Nye Metoder, New Methods, Beslutningsforum, the decision system. Can you share with us a little bit how these discussions were, and what the feedback from the authorities are?
Maybe the main conclusion, if I may may say, is that we do want to be committed partners to the Norwegian society. So, and we do want to find solutions together. And I think that's the most important, let's say, conclusion from our discussions. And to do that, we need to see exactly what are, let's say, the philosophical principles at stake. What does the country want? What do the authorities want? And exactly to Cyril's point, the moment we identify that it's not just any type of therapy, but it's the best, then we are willing to go there, because we're very confident in the clinical evidence of our products and our future pipeline. And it's important that we come up with solutions together with the authorities to do that. And we were discussing, obviously, here, there are multiple innovative agreements in which this type of performance can be valued and make its way to patients faster. So we are really committed to that.
Right. So Scandinavia, it's a small part of Europe, but we have fostered, not in Norway, unfortunately, but in Sweden and Denmark, they have fostered big companies like AstraZeneca in Sweden, which now is, of course, a global company, and Novo Nordisk, which, of course, is a global company. So, looking to Norway, we are a tiny dwarf compared to the Danish and kind of Swedish pharmaceutical market. You don't agree, obviously.
It's my country now, so yeah. I have to disagree.
So how can we build? How can MSD build assist the government and the industry in building a more a bigger and more export focused biotech and pharmaceutical industry in Norway? Is that possible?
I think it really goes back to what Cyril and also Andrea was into. The foundation for that is to have a system, or let me put it like this, the foundation is to have a vision and idea which exists in Norway today on where we want to go, but then also have a system that supports the kind of the ability for the healthcare ecosystem or the total system to go in that direction. And that's it's, you know, in full transparency, also a little bit where we are concerned that part of the discussions that we've had in full transparency is that we're concerned about, is there a match between the national vision on for life science and what's happening at the shop floor on a daily basis, or in the hospital clinics, or in the procurement department, and that's where we're concerned, and we have a different opinion, but we're also very willing for a discussion. But going back to, if you compare, first of all, it's really difficult to compare the kind of the country history, so to say, in terms of development of big companies. I mean, you could turn it around and say, where is the oil industry in Sweden? It's non-existing, because there's no kind of, there's no sources for it, so to say. But I think there's good examples that you mention. I think it is a matter of a ecosystem that have benefited science, benefited the curiosity on move things forward, and also, of course, within certain limits, also the ability to pay for that.
Sure.
I mean, it is an important component. You can't neglect that.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that the current policy in Norway, where we kind of are somewhat free riders on innovations, is that a problem for Norway in building a viable and big pharma industry?
But so when you say free riders, I have to comment that I fundamentally disagree on that, because I think if you go back, Norway, from our company perspective, in the late 80s was leading one of the most important and influential clinical trials within the cardiovascular field, led by Professor Terje Pedersen at the Rikshospitalet in Oslo, that actually set the standard for what we today call evidence-based medicine. So I don't think there is a matter of a free ride, not at all, but I think there is a matter of concerns about, is it now supporting where the vision is?
Mm. Yeah, I'd build on that. And as you can see, we're not going to disclose in detailed conversations that are ongoing, but those conversations are very constructive.
Mm.
And in the same way that I aspire to share with the stakeholders that we met, that they would appreciate also some of our considerations, I know that on their side, they're striving to do the best for Norwegian citizens. They're striving to manage a reality, which is affordability of innovation.
Mm.
And there's multiple innovative therapies that are out there that are coming. So we know those challenges. What we're saying is we usually are managing within very transparent and predictable framework to address those challenges. And that is why in many, many countries that have lower GDP per capita, we're able to provide faster and broader access. And that's what we, linking it to your question, that's why we're very confident. And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Because we're saying, hey, you want to drive science in the country. You want to have broader clinical trials. We're doing this.
Yeah.
30% of those we're doing.
Yeah.
Let's work our way for those truly benefit Norwegian patients. And that's where we believe that we need to encourage better balancing those two considerations and looking into really resetting the system on clinical evidence and value. It's important to go fast. Now the authorities are saying we want to go faster, and that's really good, but you should not go faster at the detriment of the best evaluation for what should be put in the hands of eventually, the whole community and society.
Mm.
And I think the key point is that we have these examples. I'm coming from one of such countries, you know, so I managed to see firsthand the introduction of therapies in oncology that completely revolutionized the clinical practice. I have the privilege of seeing how the introduction of a vaccine with broader coverage can impact society. So we have those examples from other countries. It can be done. We just need to reach this agreement that also Norway wants the best for Norwegians. And once we reach that agreement, I think we are more than open to have a discussion.
Are you optimistic in reaching this kind of, you called it, agreement with the Norwegian authorities?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's why we're here. Yeah.
When will that arrive? When will that decision arrive? When do you think we will see some concrete changes?
I may start with that, because it's one of my reflections, Hans. Mm. I think here the big disconnect, as I said, is in between the aspirations and what we're saying on a philosophical level and what's actually happening, as Jakob also mentioned. But I think the inflection point will come at the moment when there will be a realization that what's happening in practice is not reflecting the philosophy of how Norway wants to define its future generations and what can we provide for our current generation? So I think that's very important. And once there will be that realization that they want this, I think then for sure things are going to change.
It's a phase of, I mean, the leaders of the procurement body in Norway are being looked at also beyond Norway, because there's a lot that they do that they do extremely well. What's happening is that there's so much innovation coming, and we're moving into personalized care. We're moving into combining different medicines, and essentially what we're saying is we're encouraging, say, would you consider rethinking some of the approaches you're taking, because those approaches may not be the ones that really enable you to address those multiple new modalities of treatment. And I think that's something that I do believe is going to come, and it's coming with, it will come with some hiccups and some will work, some will work less, but I do believe that it will come, because essentially, and going back to Jacob's point, we all share the same purpose. How do we provide fast access to what truly is innovative? And it's just a question of how you evaluate that innovation and how then do you make it available. And there are no reason why that's not feasible. There are no reason why it's not feasible. But the current frameworks need to evolve.
Right. So, and the government says, and Beslutningsforum or Decision Forum says, that the new medicines are too costly. So there are a lot of processes, bargaining. They say no, and you have to go back and bargain again and come back one, two, and three times. What do you say to the argument that the medicines are too costly?
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
I think it everything boils down to some very simple principles. If one of your family members would have cancer, would you like that family member to be treated with a therapy that it's just prolonging life, or with a therapy that has the highest chance of survival for that family member?
Yeah.
Would you like your kid to be vaccinated with just a HPV vaccine, or with the vaccine that it has the broadest coverage and safety for your child? So once we realize that, that comes also at a cost.
It is obvious.
Another way of framing it, I totally agree, by the way, but another way of framing it is, and a question that I'm asking myself also from time to time, is what is it really that we want to build and have here? Because it's very easy to draw down one single price tag and say, hey, is this acceptable or not? To me, this is fundamentally about, do we want to have a healthcare system, not only in Norway, but in all the markets that we serve, do we want to have a healthcare system that is top-notch to an acceptable cost? Or do we want to have acceptable treatment results and the absolutely lowest price, or lowest price with then, in the best case, an acceptable outcome of it? And I think that's really where it stands. And if you're opting in for the, you want to have top-notch healthcare system and results, to an acceptable cost, then you can go in and you can start to take that discussion. And it really comes down to the value that you bring. That's why we're passionate about the clinical data that we're, to Sarah's point, are generating here in Norway and in many other places as well. But if you start to build it from there, you come to a point where say, here's the value that this particular product is bringing to the society and to individuals. And just because I was thinking, I have to, before I forget it, if you take down the value of some of the products within the immuno-oncology that we're working with, in lung cancer, for example, just to take the practical kind of impact of it. A few years ago, within lung cancer, there was no patient organizations. And, you know, so the question is, so why is that? Well, the simple reason is that nobody survived. So there was no kind of room for a patient organization. Now, today, we have strong patient organizations that have an impact, that they want to do things. And I think that's an extremely tangible example of the impact and the value. So it's not about the cost per se. You have to look at it from the value, from the individual perspective.
Exactly. And to this point, I think, just imagine that we have therapies now that are doubling survival in lung cancer. That was an inflection point in medicine. So I think it's very important for that to be reflected.
Mm. And that's a significant impact on society.
Absolutely. So in Norway, you have private cancer hospitals, which are kind of busy actually at the moment, treating people who pay for themselves or via their insurance. Typically on new innovative medicines like ADCs, anti-drug conjugates, for instance, is a lot of treatment going on. Is that the same situation in other countries in Europe, in Scandinavia, and in the Nordic?
I think it varies. I mean, Europe has generally one of the heterogeneity, if you want, in terms of the systems of care. Some are universal access. Exclusively public funded. Some have a combination of public and private. So it's, you have that that large number of systems. Mm. Some are, and usually those systems, when you have public and private, they either come being very complementary. So the private is regulated under the Ministry of Health. What you would not want, and I think this is the debate that is emerging from what I understand in Norway, is that the private emerges because within the public you wouldn't be able to access the same novel therapies that is creating a challenge in terms of equitable access as and a citizen I can only agree.
But to build on that, and I think it's a very important point, and I don't understand why is it more obvious for the society here, because one of the first things I learned about Norway is the emphasis that's put on equity and equality in access. It's even written in front of the parliament that you need to have equal access for your citizens and equal rights. When you see that these discrepancies are starting to emerge in the society, that the private sector is actually seeing, we see such a big growth there, it means that there's a deficiency somewhere. So maybe we need to look further into that. We also see that children are being vaccinated outside the NIP. We need to ask ourselves, why is that happening? So how can we as a state, not us, but the Norwegian state, do something about that? So that we can go back to our fundamental principles as a society.
But if I look at where I stand myself, so to say, I'm Swedish by origin, so it's pretty close to, we share a lot of the foundational pieces. And to me, the answer is super easy. I think we should have a kind of a publicly funded healthcare system for all. And I think we just came from Sykehus in Köping and showed the. It's covering the entire country, which is huge, and the distances that is being covered in a very kind of efficient and effective model. But I think it goes back also to where you started, Cyril. That should not mean that we should accept a kind of products that are just good enough. So they don't go kind of against each other. I think they complement each other.
That's an interesting discussion. If Norway changes their politics or policy in this respect, how do you think MSD can assist Norway in building a more strong and viable and professional biotech industry? Is that possible, or are you willing to do that?
That's what we do in many countries, and that's what we pride ourselves to start doing in Norway. We just hired, I think, close to 10 new colleagues in the clinical operations in the last 12 months, as I hear. So we have more clinical trials that have been approved, and we have an ambitious plan. So that's the first thing, that our ambition is to continue doing this. And you just quoted the number, I have to quote it again, 30% by myself. Had not realized it. The second is an important aspect is Norway benefits from a very strong healthcare infrastructure. that is rich in terms of data, rich in registries. That offers opportunity to better understand science, to better understand what we call real-world evidence, and to develop further partnerships in the future. And that's something that we do in many places. Jacob from Sweden will say that we have an important partnership with Karolinska Institute, for example. So that is at the essence of what we strive to do. And by all means, Norway has a number of hospitals and institutions with whom we could work even further in the future. Mm. So that dynamic is a dynamic that we like to drive, and that's a dynamic that we try to drive in many countries. When I travel across Europe, and I whether I'm in Bulgaria, in Greece, in Sweden, we try to look at how we can progress in terms of, in particular, doing the right thing in research and clinical trial. Mm. I mean, today in Norway, it's close to 1,000 patients that are enrolled in our clinical trials. Mm. That is not a small number.
Quite substantial. Yeah.
And also, I think that what we can bring to the Norwegian society, and to me, it's probably the most important thing that we can do, is we're bringing life years with our portfolio. We are giving more time to patients, for them, for their families. And now, as Cyril mentions, we're also moving into curative settings. So not only improving and giving hope for more time with their families, but we're talking about a cure. We're talking about curing cancer. Mm.
You know what's interesting, and we use that example. For me, as I'm a French citizen, I see Norwegian society and the policymakers as very bold in several areas, truly bold,
and it's
impressing. I mean, and in Europe, we speak about some of those decisions, in particular across, you know, on in the environment, electric cars.
Yeah.
I could give many other examples, and also very much thinking at the heart of also the policy, you know, decision making. What do we do for the future generations?
Sure.
Which is well ingrained, and I'd say, be as bold in life science. Be as bold in thinking we want to have that you know, better health into the future. And there's a lot there that is being done. We can partner to do even more.
So today we probably have a new Minister of Health. He's coming from for the Ministry of Commerce. So that can be a kind of an advantage for him to have this also background when he's going into the Norwegian Health Ministry. Or what do you think, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everything that we talked about here is hopefully examples on how, you know, components of a successful life science strategy, and I think that is applicable on any type of industry. If you're serious about that, you want to build something new, you need to make sure that there is an ecosystem in place, that you have in this case regulation, you have a vision, an idea, momentum, but you also need to have governmental bodies, agencies, people in the organization that is also, you know, committed to take things in one particular direction. I think he can come in with the Ministry of Enterprise perspective. Mm. I think that's good.
Mm. I think, without commenting, and I'm not by far not an expert in Norwegian, you know, policy and what makes me enthusiastic is leaders such as the leader you just mentioned. Have probably that ability to look at ecosystems and at a broader level. You know, when you think about healthcare, it's tremendously complex. Think about the number of interventions to improve population health. It's how you organize healthcare. It's multiple points of intervention, and medicines are only one small point of intervention. And then if you take this and want to both achieve better health for the citizen and the population, and at the same time have increasing research, discovery, manufacturing in the country, you need to have that ability to look at the ecosystem broadly. Mm. And I think leaders that have worked in trade, economy, they usually have also that ability to look at it broadly and then use the deep expertise that exists in within the Ministry of Health, within the other important bodies in Norway to define the right policies. Mm. So, we're looking forward to working and dialoguing.
That's and good. In essence, I think it's quite clear. The moment you have a very strong healthcare system, that immediately translates into a very strong economy. And there are multiple factors, and we have all the data behind. So we're more than happy to welcome the new minister on board.
Mm. Andrea, you are quite new to MSD in Norway. You have a long career in other countries. Can you, when we're now approaching the end of this podcast, can you give us a few highlights of what your vision is for your work here in Norway and what you are trying to achieve?
Thank you. I think it's a complex answer to that.
Mm.
I must say that I am profoundly impressed by the quality of the discussions of the personnel, of the professionals that are working in the healthcare system. And I think that we just need to bridge those aspirations and those principles into what's actually happening in the system and how that translates into what's reaching the patients in Norway. I think we have all the tools necessary. We are a global company, quite a significant one, with a very strong portfolio. So we have a lot to bring to the table, and we want to partner. I think that's the most important, and it's the key thing for me.
Mm.
Because if we reach that agreement of what we want together as a society, I'm here to partner with the Norwegian authorities.
Mm. So you are optimistic and you're eager to make things happen?
For sure. I have a great team and I'm here also to support Norwegian patients.
Okay, that's good. So I think that brings us to a close. Cyril, Andrea and Jacob, thank you very much for joining us in this podcast, and the best of luck in your further endeavor.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.